The meeting will come to order and members will take their seats, so we'll get started here. I believe there's a quorum present, and someone has taken an opportunity to look over the minutes from the previous meeting. Could move the minutes for us, I'd appreciate it.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Greg Davids, Representative Davids moves the bill. Is there a second? Any corrections or additions to the bill, minutes as they were read? And then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion carried. Bill. This morning, members, we're going to be having, we have six bills on the agenda. We just got a phone call about a half an hour ago saying one of the bills is not going to be heard. So Representative Lilly, House File 164, has pulled his bill. So there'll be five bills. And I know that for your agenda, we have them in a certain order. I would like to have, if Representative Coonan is ready to testify or come bring his bill before the committee, that'd be great. And I don't know if you have testifiers or people in the audience that are going to testify on your bill, Mr. Representative Coonan, but we'd like to have your bill heard at this time, if possible.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I'll get my give me a second to get my
sure. Okay. So, House File 15, a military pension income tax subtraction. And I don't know if there's anybody in the audience that is interested in testifying or would like to add comments to Representative Coon's bill, but once he's introduced the bill and had his testifiers, if there's other people that would like to testify, please let us know. Representative Coonan, for the good of the group, identify yourself with the tape and please move your bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lyle Coonan, District 20B. The path of this bill now, will it go to taxes?
Yes, we're going to be passing this up, moving on to taxes.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move that this bill be approved and be forwarded to the Tax Committee.
Very good. Please proceed.
Okay, this bill is a military pension exemption bill. And the language of this bill caps the benefit at $6,000, the first $6,000 received, and it's a maximum of $6,000. I personally would like to see this be a total exemption for all military pension, no matter how much it is, but of course, with the budget situation is the way it is this year, this bill is written to cap it at six to try and keep the negative effect on the budget from being any greater at this point. I consider this a good starting point, and hopefully in the future we can move to a full exemption on the pensions. Mr. Chairman and committee, these bills have been offered in the past, different variations of military pension exemptions, and they have got hearings, but of course, again, in the past, as now, the consideration has always been the budget, and so that's kind of the what's been the stumbling block in the past. Some of the benefits for this type of pension exemption would be for military personnel who have retired from the military but are still young enough to work and even start businesses of their own. This would be a good measure to help make sure that the veterans actually live here in Minnesota so we can compete with other states on that part. Military personnel, a lot of them are fairly high trained, highly motivated, and would be good people to have in the state as far as starting businesses or joining other businesses, and would do the state a lot of good as far as economic growth goes. But Mr. Chairman, the bill is fairly simple, and if the committee has any questions, I can try and answer those.
Thank you, Representative Coonan. Members, any questions for Representative Coonan on his bill? Anybody from the audience that would like to chime in or got some concerns or questions for this bill that's being brought forward? Representative Coonan, do you know how many retired people, military, are in your area where you live that would benefit from this?
You know, actually, I don't know those numbers, Mr. Chairman. You know, it's pretty clear that with the wars actually starting with the early 90s and on up through present day, that the number of veterans, of course, will be growing as time passes. And, of course, there's a number of veterans from, you know, you can go back even to earlier wars that are getting pensions that would benefit from this also. But as far as the exact numbers, I can't give you those right now.
Representative Coonan, do you know if people would have stayed in your area, in your, you know, towns or things like that, had they had this benefit available to them as a veteran coming back from, you know, Vietnam War or something like that?
I'm sure there would have been more. Of course, there's a number that will live there anyway because it's home, and you know, this wouldn't affect that those people. But there's a number of military personnel who, because of living in the working in the military their life, are used to living in different places, aren't necessarily tied to one place. And in the case of those individuals, making Minnesota more competitive would definitely be an advantage for Minnesota.
Well, with that, Representative Coonan renews his motion to have House File 15 pass and be moved to the Tax Committee, Chair Davids, who sits on this committee. And all those in favor of passing House File 15 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion passed. You're on your way.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next bill, members... Representative Anselk, are you ready to bring forward a House File 99? Representative Anselk, Veterans Organization Tax Exemptions is the next item on our schedules to be looked at. And Representative Anselk, if you'll move your bill and proceed, that'd be great. And identify yourself for the tape. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Tom Anselk, respectfully move House File 99, and hopefully you will move it along also to the Tax Committee.
That's correct. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the time that you're giving me to hear this bill. 3 points of, transparency. One, I am a member of a Legion post, American Legion post. Two, several years ago, more than I care to admit, I was the state's director of the Gambling Control Board. And in that capacity, I got to know Legion posts and VFW posts throughout the state very, very well. In my role as the state's regulator of then charitable gambling, now called lawful gambling. And I only mention it because for one reason or another, that activity has become a very critical function of our Legion posts and VFW posts in terms of providing services not only to veterans in the community, but to the larger community population, everything from children to the disabled and others. And lastly, I have been visited by a representative from the Assessors Association, as you might imagine. They're going to be very interested in how this would work. And they'll be playing a role in providing information as this proceeds. Members, throughout our communities, American Legion posts and VFW posts are mainstream, main street venues and businesses. And in particular, in small communities in rural Minnesota, these posts have become community centers. these posts have become venues where everything from funeral receptions to wedding receptions to birthdays to any number of events occur. In many of my small communities, functions are held at these posts. Community members are welcome, and people from all walks of life, especially elderly people, participate in these activities. I am really, really concerned about losing these activities and these facilities and these posts, in particular in rural Minnesota. There was a time where lawful gambling was literally keeping these posts afloat. And over time, for one reason or another, which I hope I don't have to get into, less and less and less of the net profit from our charitable gaming activities is being kept in our local communities for dispensing to lawful purposes by VFWs and American Legion posts. That being just one example of the pressures that these posts are under, declining membership, membership that's getting older and older and older, like me, and a myriad of other reasons. I struggle with ways to keep our American Legion and VFW posts viable in our rural communities, and I just thought that this was a common sense approach and a common sense start. What it would do, of course, would be to exempt these posts from the payment of local property taxes. And as you know, local property taxes are paid to townships, unorganized areas, municipalities, schools, and counties. And I know, of course, at the local level that this will have implications, serious implications, but as somebody who believes in progressive taxation rather than the taxing of commercial industrial property and homesteads, I just thought that this is meritorious and something that we should consider. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll take any questions you might have.
Thank you, Representative Anzalk. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Enzel. We have in stature right now, I know 2 years or two sessions ago, we passed a bill where if the service organizations such as the VFW, American Legions, if they donate into the community equal to last year's taxes, they get a break on their property tax. Now, is this... this is something that's just going to eliminate that program and just eliminate property taxes altogether?
Representative Anzo?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, thanks for reminding me of that provision. I think that provision is a good idea. I think it gets us a step toward where I think we ought to go, which is total exemption from the payment of property taxes, but it would eliminate that provision.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I know my both my VFW American Legions in Forest Lake, which I belong to, they've taken advantage of that provision, and it's been very beneficial, and it also encourages them to donate into the community. They have to also provide free of charge any use of their facilities and so forth, so it's been a great, great thing for our community. So... thank you.
Good. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative, real quickly, can you just talk about the scope of ownership? And what I mean by that is you may have a facility that has a four walls of its facility and a parking lot, but what happens if there's excess lands that may be on a 5 or 7 acre parcel where they're maybe only using 2 or 3? How would your bill address that unused property at the time?
Representative Anzo.
Mr. Chair and Representative, great question. The assessors have brought up that very topic. I haven't had an opportunity to think that through completely, but I would say that what I'm interested in, and it's going to require some tightening up of this language, but I'm most concerned about the building, the post, which includes the social portion of the veterans organization and the post and the meeting rooms, the club rooms, eating area, and so on. Excess property would definitely have to be addressed.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you.
Anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this bill, House File 99? Any further questions? If not, we'll proceed to vote. Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Anzel, do you have any indication of what this will cost each of the local units of government that you're asking to do this to?
Representative Anzel?
Mr. Chair.
Or the total, at least?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I do not, but I anticipate getting those figures and getting some clarity on that as this moves forward, if it does, from this committee to the tax committee.
Representative Kahn, I believe that the runs are going to, they're not available right now, but they are being worked on and hopefully in the near future.
So the next step
next
for
step
this
is
bill
taxes.
Is the tax committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Any further questions? If not, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of House File 99 being passed and sent to the tax committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Representative Enzel, thank you.
Very much.
Representative Detmer. You have several bills. So I'll let you decide which one you'd like to bring up first. And Representative Detmer, if you just identify yourself at the
Thank
tape.
Chair,
and then move
Representative Detmer and committee members. I'd like to first bring up House File 105.
House File 105, members.
And I have some testifiers, if they would be ready to come up. Grab a couple of chairs.
And Representative Detmer, this is the Disabled Veterans Rest Camp, and this will go on to State Government Finance, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move that we pass this, if approved, that we pass this on to the State Government Finance.
Thank you. Very good. And if your testifiers, or if you want to start to testify, or your testifiers...
I'll just make an introduction here, Mr. Chair.
Very good.
And first of all, the Disabled Veterans Rest Camp in Big Green Lake... It situates in my district, District 52A, which is just down Manning Trail, next to a nice county park. And I'm not going to go into the history. We'll let some of my testifiers talk a little bit about the history about this camp. But the last couple of years, I've taken a special interest in the camp and watched what has been going on at the camp for our disabled veterans. And with that... I'm asking for a matching grant. This would be a matching grant up to $500,000, where the camp would have to raise the funds, and they could not draw on the camp grant until they reached $100,000 on matching funds from private sources. So they have their work cut out for them by raising funds for this matching grant. But I'd like to. We have a Lori Olness here. She's going to be talking a little bit about the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program that the camp has endorsed also. And also Don Driggins is here with us. And also L. Mitchell. L. Mitchell is the chairman of the camp. So I'll let those that want to start just introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Representative Detmer. My name's Al Mitchell. I'm president of the DVRC, or Disabled Veterans Rest Camp, up at Big Marine Lake. And I represent 16 people that are representation of all the veterans organizations that we try to, that were dictated under our Article of Corporation, Legion, the DAV, the VFW, and then the Washington County and Ramsey County with their appointees to serve on this board. The camp itself is something that I'm certainly proud of, and I want to share that with a lot of veterans. For a veteran, it means a lot. For a person that hasn't had the experience of being a troop of any type, the lonely little secretary that never left the state of Minnesota, or the one that's seen the hard veteran that seen combat and has terrible feelings about that they try to keep in submission. But this camp is made up of all these veterans. They're there. It's a place for them to go, to be able to relax and enjoy, bring their families and do things and get away from it. It's a camaraderie that's there that only a veteran understands. And it's truly a wonderful place with beach and boating and fishing and other facilities, but we need to move forward with some of our funding and everything else for certain things, to upgrade our shower point, to put in a storm shelter, to make our roads and our sidewalks more accessible to handicap, to further the cabins, to take and update the 1930 cabins that we presently have that are beyond sometimes being able to repair them. So we need to move forward with this funding, and we really thank the state to give us the opportunity, or for them to consider that, and especially Representative Detmer and his constituency up there in Forest Lake in the Scandia Marina in the St. Croix area. It's just very important that we have this and they move forward, and that you will support that and help the veterans to give them something that they have when they come back, besides what I might have experienced when I was a Vietnam veteran and some other Vietnam veterans, of the lack of sympathy for us. And we're not asking for that. We're just looking for a place to have a good time and enjoy each other. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? If not, the next testifier, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, board members, our chairman, members, my name is Donald Driggins. I'm a 34-year veteran. I've spent 34 years in the military. A little bit of history about the camp. The camp was started in 1926 for shell shock victims of World War I. World War II, it came and it was called battle fatigue. Today it's called PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. The affliction hasn't changed, only the name. And our goal and purpose is to has not changed also. We've been doing the same thing since 1926. With so many Minnesota National Guard soldiers returning from Iraq and Iran, the reintegration of these soldiers from soldier to civilian and the use of our programs and services provided to them has increased. There will be many challenges that they must face, master, and accomplish. A few being replacing the stresses of war with peace, relaxing mind thoughts, mind cleansing thoughts to move beyond war, and finding a meaning in life, and coming to peace with God, themselves, and others. Most of these citizen soldiers have spouses, they and children, whose lives again are going to have to adjust to the return of the soldier, as well as the soldier has to adjust to the family and the workplace. Many of the activities that we have at the camp, at the DVRC, are take into consideration the try and relax and rest, relaxation, and therapeutic value. We had a member at the camp, a Marine, that every time he heard a helicopter come out from St. Paul Field down here, he'd run into his camper. By the end of the season, he was able to at least sit outside. He'd watch the helicopter, but he would at least. It's very hard to measure, you know, what the therapeutic value of the camp is. The camp hosts many functions. Memorial Day program, flag retirement, 4th of July, Labor Day. The camp also has a 10 by 30 pontoon that takes veterans and their guests out on the lake for fishing tours. It hosts the Hastings and Minneapolis Veterans Home several times a year for programs that they come up, and picnics, fishing trips, overnight stays with a barbecue and a campfire. And many service organizations use the camp for meetings and picnics and get-togethers. In Minnesota, in 2009, we were very lucky, and also 2010, we were very lucky to get the Minnesota National Guard, 682nd Engineer Battalion, 81st Vertical Company, in those 2 years came in and built us 5 duplex cabins. The value that they saved us was approximately $100,000 per cabin. All the labor was free. We had to furnish by the material. By law, they cannot furnish by material. The first sergeant told me that in 2009 that he had 19 block layers that he trained up and trained. I have a letter from him stating that in his 18 years of service that he's never seen as good a training as he had. In fact, reading from it, it says, It was good to not have asked for more. We could not have asked for a more perfect training event. It is great to see all of the less experienced troops become proficient in their construction skills throughout the trade. Throughout the 2 weeks, as you know, we were able to train soldiers in many different aspects, such as laying block, pouring concrete, installing whirlpool heat, framing doors, windows, setting trusses, shingles, electrical siding, and plumbing. We simply cannot perform all these tasks through the year on drill weekends. This exercise has definitely improved our combat readiness. What a great opportunity for our engineers. So it's kind of nice to get a letter from the soldiers, and we just kept telling them that they're building it for themselves. You know, I mean, because they'll be coming back, and a lot of them have come back. We keep our prices as low as we can. We're not there to make money. We're there to take care of the veterans.
Thank you, Mr. Driggins.
And Mr. Chair, and all these new cabins that have been built the last two summers by this Army National Guard Engineer Unit, they're all handicapped accessible. And they're all furnished for the families when they come in. And I was out there one weekend, and General Shelto was there and toured the facility, and he was pretty impressed by what these soldiers are doing during their annual training. So,
well, thank you, Representative Detmer. If you continue that type of a progress, that'd be great. I look forward to your testimony. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Lori Allness. I'm a retired officer with the military. I served 25 years, and not all disabled veterans are received their disability from actual combat. Myself, it's from a training incident, but we have a lot of veterans in Minnesota who use our facility, and I'd like to talk about how we became a Yellow Ribbon facility last year, 2010. Now, the purpose of the Yellow Ribbon was to recognize organizations and businesses for their commitment to military veterans and their families. And the Disabled Veterans Rest Camp has been doing this since 1926. It has been our sole mission as a nonprofit. In the past 15 years, Minnesota especially has received so many more veterans who have come back from deployments, many of them with some level of a disability. And we are seeing the toll being taken on our camp. As a nonprofit, we needed to increase the facilities, to expand the facilities. Again, we were very grateful for the military to come in. But that did take a toll on our limited budget that we maintain, or I should say we don't maintain. So we really are concentrating on the future. to have these veterans have a place to come, and along with military families. I want to emphasize again that this is a place where veterans come with their families. We're seeing more veterans not, unfortunately, as one representative, wanting to go to the VFWs and the American Legions and hanging out there. A lot of the training, the reintegration training that military folks are getting as they reintegrate, is helping them to reconnect with their families. And one of the things that they really enjoy doing, especially in our part of the country, is camp. And this is a perfect venue for kids. And a lot of times also when you have veterans who are being sent overseas, deployed, we have a lot of veterans who are single parent. So you have these children left at home. And many times they don't have someone back here when their parent is gone, or even when they come back, to take them to enjoy the outdoors, to get involved in land stewardship as we can provide. Because sometimes their disability doesn't allow them to continue that aspect of parenting. So I want to emphasize that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Allness. Any questions from the committee for Representative Kath?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question I have, Representative Detmer, is there currently funding that's being brought forward for the Veterans Rest Camp, or how has the funding been handled in the past?
Representative Detmer.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. No, there's no current funding coming from the state right now. There was some funding, I believe, 4 years ago. I think 4 years ago that came through the state, and they've built these cabins that I talked about. Also, another outdoor facility for cooking and so forth. The main emphasis now is for safety. They want to build some bathroom facilities. Handicap accessible, and also a storm shelter. Right now there's no place for these campers to get out of a storm, and we want that available to them. So right now, you know, they charge so much a night for camping, you know, and I know you have to make reservations just like at any other campground, but they have a lot of volunteer work too.
Representative Kahn.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. You were speaking about some of the reintegration dollars and how those, you know, as troops are brought home, things. Does some of that funding go through to your facility as well then for the campers' fees or anything?
No. Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if this is correctly addressed to Representative Detmer or just to members of the committee, but would this be eligible for legacy funds? There's a whole section on parks and recreation in that.
Detmer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I don't have an answer for that.
I think, Representative Kahn, I think once it goes to the State Government of Finance, I think Representative Lanning will probably be able to, because the legacy does fit underneath his umbrella.
Not necessarily. The Parks and Rec is in the... And so, actually, my suggestion would be not to send it to State Government Finance, but instead to send it to Representative McNamara's committee, because that I don't know if it's a separate division. It's Representative Erdahl is the chair of it, because I would think that would be a better first place to look, because that's, frankly, you know, it's like what Willie Sutton asked when he was asked why he robbed the banks, and he said that's where the money is. Well, that's kind of the only money that we have available. Mm-hmm. And if we think it might ever be available for legacy funding, then it would be a real mistake to ever do it through a standard source of state government funding, because then you could never use legacy funding for it. So my suggestion is not that we might not want to put some state government, but my suggestion is that the best place would be to first send it to that division.
Representative Depper?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I just got the word that the camp is not eligible because it's a private, it's only open for military. So being a private camp, it would not be eligible for those legacy funds.
But, Mr.
Representative
Kahn, what would that...
It's not open to the public.
What would that determination be? Where does it say that?
Representative Depper.
Because it is open, obviously, to a section of the public, the veterans.
Aye.
So... No, for example, Is it part of the Constitution? Is it part of the law? Is there some aspect? I'm not saying that we might not want to look at this too. I'm just saying that that's a better first place to look at it. It's a more certain place to be able to get funding in a tight budget when most of what we're doing is looking at cutting budgets.
Yeah. Representative Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I think that's one thing that Mr. Cleary will check into us and see if that's a possibility. But from what I understand, that being a private camp open only to the military, that it wouldn't qualify. That's my understanding. I could be wrong.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
I would just say that the military is a very important part of the public. So I would not consider that a private camp like other private camps.
Mr. Cleary, could you give us enlightenment, or would you be willing to give us...
Not at my fingertips, Mr. Chairman, but I'd be happy to follow up on that.
Okay. I appreciate that. We'll look into it and get some further clarification. I know that Representative Lanning has already asked for this bill to come to his committee, so it came from him to begin with, and at that time when he brings it to the full committee, he might be able to designate, and at that time maybe have Mr. Cleary give some clarification to that. So, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we should look carefully at the thoughts and ideas of my good friend from Minneapolis. I think it'd be a brilliant move if it would fit in there, so I'm hoping it can get over to Representative Chairman McNamara's committee and then to the division of Chair Erdahl, because I agree with my colleague 100% that if, I think that should be the first place we should be looking, and then if that doesn't work, then come through the other option here. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kahn,
I would suggest that you either lay it over and then consult with the two chairs about what's going to happen, or send it. If you want to keep it moving, I would send it to the Legacy Division and then let it go from there.
Well, Mr. Representative Kahn, the Legacy Division is in the preview of Representative Lanning's.
Yes. No, so it isn't, Mr. Chairman. Not for this. The Parks and Rec.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But the bill did come from Lanning's committee to begin with. So we were told that he wanted it back. I think in between there we can make that decision as to where to go. But I think that recommendation is good that to be. And Ms. Allness?
This camp here, the Disabled Veterans Rest Camp, it's not a public park and it's not a public camp. The qualification to come into that is you do have to show DD-214 military. So there are restrictions, and you have to approve from the Veterans Affairs that you do have a disability for the preference that we give.
Well,
Mr.
Chairman, as I said before, this is a very important segment of our public. We do have things that are, I think, restricted. The public doesn't mean totally open to everything. We do have events that are only open to children or to younger people and so forth. So I don't care where the direction is. I'm just suggesting that that's a place to look. And that if that is ever eligible for legacy funding, it would be, and maybe it can be made eligible for legacy funding by a change in statute. Just because the law says something doesn't mean that we can't change it, but it would be a terrible mistake to ever fund it from the general fund if we think that it someday might be eligible for legacy funding, because then we never could fund it from legacy funding.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Kahn on this. The Cultural Heritage Committee in the past has been very creative, and I think that if we could possibly fund it through there some way, I mean through some, like Representative Kahn said, some statute change, we need to take a look at that, because I think that'd be much more favorable than going the direction we're headed.
Representative Detmer, to that.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Kahn. I have no problem going different routes here if we can accomplish what we would accomplish for the funding for the camp. So, I'll take any advice from the from you, Mr. Chair, if we want to redirect it to another committee? What do we? How do we process that, Mr. Chair?
Well, I'd love to take the advice of both my colleagues here, but I have a request from Representative Lanning to bring it back to his committee, so I think he can then redirect down to the legacy
okay.
committee. So I'll let him make that final.
That's
I hate
fine.
To get in hot water with the boss.
That's fine. And I guess I would like to, move that my bill be passed out of this committee to the State Government Finance Committee, and then we can take it from there.
Representative Detmer moves House File 105 to be moved, passed, and moved on to State Government Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion passed, and we're ready to go with that one. Representative Detmer, your next bill. Thank you,
yes.
testifiers.
However you do it.
Representative Detmer, what bill would you like to take up next?
Let's go with, Mr. Chair, let's go with House File 82.
House File 82. If you'd like to move that bill, that'll be moving on to taxes.
Yes, I would like to move that bill out of this committee to the Tax Committee.
And do you have testifiers?
And I have a speaker or a testifier here, Mr. Severson.
Okay. Representative Detmer, if you could just give us kind of an introduction to your bill and then pass on to those who are going to testify. They can introduce themselves on behalf of House File 82.
Well, House File, Mr. Chair, House File and members, House File 82 again deals with the military retirement and tax subtraction created. It's a phase-in, so it's a little bit different than what we heard from Representative Conan. It's a phase-in over over a few years, and this is something that the state's been dealing with for the last several sessions. I know the last two sessions that I've served on the Veterans Affairs Committee, and the whole concept of this is to encourage our veterans after 20 years of service to retire here in Minnesota, and creating, you know, as they retire here in Minnesota, of course, they're going to buy homes, they're going to buy cars, they're going to get jobs here, and they're going to also pay other taxes here in Minnesota, obviously. But we're just one of six states that still tax our veterans' pensions. And I've asked some other people here to testify, and I'll just turn it over to them.
Thank you. If you'd identify yourself for the tape, and please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. I'm also a 30-year retired Master Gunnery Sergeant from the United States Marine Corps. That yellow sheet you asked earlier, how many retirees were in the state of Minnesota, I put this together off of the 2009 DOD actuary. The 2010 information isn't available at this time. As of noon yesterday, these were the numbers that were available. So if you go down to number 33, that's where Minnesota falls in to the amount of retirees that live in the state of Minnesota at present. We are 0.84%, less than 1% of the military retirees live in the state of Minnesota. And if you go down the right side of that paper, it just lists a few of the reasons why you might want to bring more of the second career military into the state of Minnesota. A lot of facts and figures there. We bring $250 million into the state's economy as we sit here right now, comes into Minnesota through our pensions. On the back side, I just threw this in here. We're always being compared to either Wisconsin or North Dakota or South Dakota or one of the states around us. So that gives you an idea of how much behind Wisconsin we have fallen since they went tax-exempt on their military pensions about 9 years ago. In the last 9 years, Wisconsin has brought in over $207 million more into their state's economy through pensions than Minnesota did, because they went tax-exempt and more people are moving into Wisconsin than Minnesota that are retiring. I'll be glad to answer any questions about that sheet at any time. You can call me, or, you know, I have a little more statement to read here. But
Mr. Donay, we have a question from Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, looking first at the first side of the sheet that you referred to, this is, it seems to me this is highly population dependent. Did you normalize this to the population of the states? I notice all, as far as I can think, I don't pretend to have these numbers at my fingertips, all of the states below Minnesota are states with much lower population. So if these weren't normalized to population, I would say this is a really irrelevant piece of information. But if it was, then please correct me.
Mr. Donay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, this is straight off the DOD actuary. This just says, doesn't say how, what the geographical area of the state is or anything. It just says this is how many military retirees live in the state. I don't know that there's a chart in an actuary. I will go back and look, and if there is, I will bring that information to you, ma'am.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just say this is totally useless information unless you normalize it to the populations of the state, which we clearly state, if you're comparing the state of Texas, Florida, California, or New York with Minnesota, just if people just stayed in place, they would have far more veterans than Minnesota would.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, the top 10 on this list have an enormous amount of military facilities in those states. That's why they have an extreme amount of military retirees. The commissary, the PX, the medical facilities, all those facilities are there. The object of showing you this is to show you that we need to bring more of these qualified people to Minnesota to help with our industries.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I'm saying that there's a lot of things that affects this list other than the aspect that's supposed to be addressed by Representative Detmer's bill. And unless it's normalized to omit those, to take into account those, this is kind of a worthless piece of information. That's my opinion.
Representative Davids.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can see where Representative Kahn's going, and I wouldn't say it's a useless piece of information. I'm saying it could be much improved if it would be on a per capita basis. Every state below the 33rd there has a smaller population than Minnesota, but I was just doing a little math here in my head. Texas is about 5 times the population of Minnesota. It has over 10 times the number of veterans living there. California is about 10 times the size of Minnesota, and so that's kind of about average. So I'd like to request that the author or his testifiers see if there's some information to do a per capita, how many veterans per capita are there. That'd give us a lot clearer look.
Mr. Donay?
Yes, sir, we will get that information. Also, Mr. Cleary's office has put together some information on this. I don't know if that got into your package yet. Did that get in there, Mr. Cleary?
I believe so.
Which further talks about the pensions and which states do what exemption, although it doesn't list by per capita. If I could just finish my last statement.
Go ahead, Mr. Manzi. Mr. Donay.
I would like to highlight some of the reasons for a tax exemption for a second career military. First of all, I'm not here to talk about the hardships or sacrifices that are endured by the military while serving their country. I'm here to talk about the future of Minnesota. Second career military bring a well-educated workforce, with most of them having at least a college degree. Education and leadership, management, and technical skills are just what is needed to keep Minnesota's economy supplied with the continuing or higher level workforce that we need. The following statement was made by one of the legislators last year as when I was down here at one of the committee meetings. Do you want to support veterans or do you want to support school children? It's the latter of that statement that concerns me the most, as I have grandchildren and whose education is extremely important to me. Without taking action now to ensure that Minnesota has the qualified workers to keep our industries going and to bring in new ones to our state, I have great concerns for the welfare of my grandchildren. I've heard time and time again from the floor of the Capitol, I have to do what is right for my district. So I ask you, how can you go back to your districts and tell the people of Minnesota that you have not supported, one, the returning veterans who have served our nation and our state, two, the business community who wants and needs qualified workers? Business make up a good share of our tax base within the state. And three, the additional revenue brought into the state's economy by those qualified workers. Where else can you get workers who will spend money in the state that they didn't earn here? And finally, I ask you once again to look to Minnesota's future. Think about what Minnesota needs to get those qualified workers back here. Thank you, sir.
President Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have, from some of the things you have, a question about the second side of the yellow sheet, too. You talked about the importance of large military establishments in determining where veterans end up living. Doesn't Wisconsin have a very large one? Isn't that where a lot of people are deployed from also?
Mr. Donay?
I'm not sure what their National Guard deployment ratio is. I know Minnesota is one of the largest.
I believe you said that where veterans settle depends on the veterans settle also depends on facilities that they can use, such as the PX and things like that. Is that relevant to this,
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn? Wisconsin is only two clicks above us on the list. They don't have an over amount of retirees returning to Wisconsin, but they are gaining more and more retirees than Minnesota is at this time.
Representative Kahn.
This was something I didn't think about until you said that it was also important on the existence of military facilities in the state, so that the available of hospitals, the PX, and so forth, although I was just asking, did that factor into the Wisconsin model?
Mr. Donay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I believe there are only one or two large National Guard facilities in Wisconsin. We have Camp Ripley here, they have Fort McCoy in Wisconsin. Other than that, maybe Representative Detmer is more familiar with the Guard and what facilities are there, but there aren't any naval or any other facilities that I know of.
But the question is, what's the difference in size between those and in facilities like PX and medical facilities and that kind of thing between Minnesota and Wisconsin? Just a question. I don't know.
Representative Kahn, I think Representative Creasel may have some comment to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, they have Fort McCoy, which is an active Army post. We do not have an active Army post in Minnesota. Our closest would be Fort Snelling, which is Army and Air, and there are people that are active there. So I would say it's similar. It's primarily used as training. So there's not commissaries and stuff more than Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions for Mr. Donay? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you,
and
Mr. Chair, and
somebody, if somebody else would like to testify.
Morning.
Welcome.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Dan Severson, and I am here to testify on behalf of the Second Career Military Pension Exemption.
Welcome.
Thank you. I put a handout here just to take a little look at. These are some of the benefits, but just to address Representative Kahn's question on the per capita that was on the yellow sheet previously. In the process of doing this in previous years, I've looked over the overall population of the United States being a little over 300 million. The number of retirees that are currently existing within the U.S. military, I think, is about 2.5 1.94 million, and then normalize that for the Minnesota population of 5.1 million, and determine that the per ratio, the amount of retirees that should be in the state of Minnesota is about 32,000. Excuse me. We have just over 15,000 now. So when you take the number of the amount of income that is received from DFAST, or Defense Finance and Accounting Services, to the state of Minnesota through the salaries of those retirees, just the retired pay, about $260 million, you can see that we should have at least twice that. We should be bringing in $500 million into the state of Minnesota just in retired pay. Now we go to the other section of what I wanted to address is the issue when a military person retires from the military with a 20 or 30 year degree, they have a menu to choose from. Every 50, all of the 50 states basically are on the table, and one of the first things the person that's presenting the transition assistance class will say is, here's the tax advantages of where you want to move. And we are one of six that currently tax that military pension, one of six. Now an interesting fact is that in 1978, Minnesota did not tax that pension. 1978, the legislation was put forth to tax, to obviously increase the revenue for the state for spending purposes. Well, what's happened since then, and obviously some of those states never did that, and I think that's why you have a vast majority of states that don't tax the pension, understood that it was not necessarily a wise thing to do, nor were they revenue strapped. I can't surmise what was going on in 1978, but I will tell you that what that has done to the military population, the retired military population in Minnesota, is it stagnated it and probably even regressed, because a lot of the members that we have that are military retirees are passing away. A lot of them are World War II or Korean War veterans, and so that's a diminishing return. And one of the questions typically asked, well, if this was enacted, would we see an increase in retiree population in Minnesota? And I think the answer is in the Wisconsin model. And when they did this in 2001, they were making about $800,000 a month more than Minnesota. Now it's over $1.3 million. In fact, it turns out to be about 30-some million, 33 million per year more than Minnesota. So they are in an increase. One of the individuals that came and testified in the first couple of years that we had this bill forward was a retired 06 who was working on this project, and he said, you know what, if this doesn't pass this year, I'm gone to Wisconsin. The next year, he was gone to Wisconsin. And we see that in many, many cases. When I was carrying this bill, people would send me emails that said, if you can't get this passed, I'm out of the state. But what does that do to us? Well, take a look at this sheet. When you're talking about second career military and people are looking for places to put their roots down, these are the individuals you want in your community. They bring, these are senior executives, leaders in management who are retiring after 20 and 30 years in cutting edge technology. These are the people that Fortune 500 companies are looking for. They're looking for a community to settle in, to buy a house. These individuals come to Minnesota, and they have to buy a house after 20, 30 years. So they're on the hook for the next 20, 30 years on a home loan. But guess what? They're going to be invested into this community, and they're going to find a church, and their high volunteerism rate really contributes to the community. Continuously upward mobile. They're always screened for drugs in their career. They're tested on an annual basis to meet stringent physical fitness standards. The other issue is their spouses. When they come here to set up their household, their spouses are typically also career professionals. That is a second income that's coming to this state that will not come to the state if they move to Wisconsin. And they bring their own health care coverage. They're highly educated, and they're entrepreneurs who want to start businesses. That's what Minnesota is looking for right now. And these are non-indigenous, to speak in military ease, these are non-indigenous assets that are highly mobile and do their research. If we don't change the face of how we try and recruit these highly talented individuals to Minnesota by passing this provision, we're going to be exactly where we were 5 or 6 years ago with an extremely, if not stagnant, growth rate of these high-tech professionals sitting outside and saying, why in the world would we want to go to Minnesota where it's cold all the time? And Mr. Chair and members, I'd be happy to field any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Severson? Well, I appreciate your coming. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you.
If we can have the next testify give his testimony, and we might get out of here by 2 o'clock. I'm just kidding. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, gentlemen and ladies. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm a service-disabled veteran, Vietnam combat veteran, and I belong to United Veterans Legislative Council and the Military Action Group. I'm really going to talk about this being a jobs bill. I mean, I run a service-disabled veteran-owned business, and the people that I'm around, I belong to an organization that we are in the business of trying to bring Minnesota businesses here who are from veterans who are getting out of the service. And some of my friends who own businesses, the electronics IP companies, they have moved to Wisconsin specifically for that because they can get a better deal with the their income, also with the tax situation with veteran-owned businesses. As Representative Kahn said, I am an important segment of the public forum in this country, in this state, and I believe that this is a way for us to bring more veteran-owned businesses here. Entrepreneurship is what makes business, makes jobs in this state, and we need more of it. The governor says he wants to get more businesses here. Well, this is one way to do it. I can't say that Lockheed Martin left the state of Minnesota because of the taxes on their retired veterans' pay, but they certainly didn't like it, and I've talked to other veterans-owned businesses, and BAE is going to be reducing the amount of people that they have here. It would be another way for us to have Minnesota veterans be able to come here and realize that, hey, after 20 years, I'm not going to have this tax. And it's a smart way to do it. Wisconsin has, and they also are cleaning up on us. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Any other information from the audience or testifiers there? Representative Detmer, if you represent Mr. Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And just in delineating the bill a little bit in its phase-in provision, if you'll remember, about 3 years ago, the legislature passed a provision for a $750 tax credit for incomes, low-income earners who are military people, basically military. And that $750 tax credit created a set-aside of $10 million. And Mr. Cleary, I'm not sure if that was over the biennium or if that was per year.
You Mr. know? Cleary?
Per year, Mr.
Per year.
Per year.
No. And just as I had supposed, the total impact of that $750 of those that claimed turns out to be a little more than $1 million out of that $10 million. So that $10 million set-aside still has about a $9 million delta on that. That's what this is targeted at, is that the phase-in that we would use for the first year, 25% of the of the military pay would be exempt. The next year it would turn to be 35, and then it would be increased by 10% until it hit 55. At 55%, it's held static until the number of retirees upon the date of enactment has increased by 1,000. At that point, we figure about 2,000 new retirees in the state pays for the remaining provision of this bill. And so it's a phase-in that should have fairly neutral impact on the budget as it's put forward here.
Representative Kahn.
I'm interested in the $10 million. Did that $10 million not cancel when it wasn't used? Did it stay on? Do we know?
Mr. Cleary, do you, our staff, have any idea?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I don't know, but I will find out how that's being tracked.
Okay.
Mr. Representative Davis.
Will you call Nina Manzi from House Research up?
Ms. Manzi, could you answer that question for us? If you could come to the table, testifier's table.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department.
Welcome.
When the Department of Revenue works with the Department of Management and Budget each November and February to prepare the economic forecasts, They include updated information on all of the income tax deductions and credits in estimating the forecasted amount of revenues that will come in from the individual income tax. So when the individual income tax estimate was updated in the November forecast, the Department of Revenue had information on the number of people who had actually claimed this credit in tax year 2009, the first year it was in effect. So that remaining $9 million would be already included in the forecast. So it has been put back into the income tax revenue line in the consolidated fund statement and in the forecast.
So,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, then saying that this is irrelevant to the budget is not a correct statement.
No.
Okay, just check.
It's not.
Yep.
Further questions or testimony here? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see, I'm not used to doing tax stuff, and I don't, not used to understanding all these numbers, but I don't see any, this applies no matter what the total income of the person is. I don't see any income-related caps on this.
Representative
Mr. Chair, yeah, you're right. There's no cap. There's no cap on income.
Representative Kahn?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, when we look at the budget situation that we're in and we look at the problems that we're seeing, you know, particularly returning veterans have and the additional problems that I think we need, that we, places where we've been really negligent, like dealing with mental health issues of returning veterans and so forth. I mean, unless this is really limited to people with low incomes, and we're looking at a general fund appropriation essentially, I just kind of see greater needs for it than for doing this, again, unless it's income related. My husband just happens to have been the executor of a will of a relative of his who had no family, served in World War II, and had a fairly sizable estate, which a lot of it went to charity and so forth. And suddenly at the end, there was some federal veterans pension came in there, which was a tiny proportion of the estate. And I think people like this are not dependent on that and are not, and I think in terms of the federal government, it obviously wasn't an important part of the budget. But in terms of the state budget, where we're looking for everything we can do, it can be an important part. So I'd be much more sympathetic to this if there was some income limits on it so that we knew it was going to people who truly needed it.
Representative Depper.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I would say most soldiers that I know that have put in 20 years have been traveling, you know, around the country, the world, don't own a home, and your pensions are, you know, based on various things. I know, and the reserve component is based on the number of points you were able to accumulate over the 20-year period or more. And I would say, unless you're a general, most people who retire are not at that level of income, and most of them don't have finances or home ownerships, things like that, that they have to then buy and reestablish themselves in a retirement community in the state where they want to retire.
Well, Representative Kahn.
I'm just saying this was a person who actually served in World War II in Japan, was a very young when he did this, obviously then had a full life after that. All I'm saying is that no decision he ever made had to do with his veterans pension, and in fact I think it wasn't even known about except for the diligence of the federal government, which ferrets out this thing. And I'm just saying that there's got to exist some people like that who do not need, you know, have paid no attention to their pensions all their life essentially, do not need it because they've been successful in other ways. And I guess in a time of very tight budgets, I kind of object to giving those people part of our general fund.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on this one, I'd have to respectfully disagree with Representative Kahn. I say don't just let a few folks come in. I say let them all come in. I mean, if somebody's very successful, has a spouse that's very successful, buys the big house, does all their things, we're going to have a lot more income coming in by giving it to everyone. We don't want to just say if you make less than X per year, you're welcome. If you make more than X, you're not welcome. I say welcome them all. And I, the problem we have is with static modeling, we're just going to see it as a cost. I'd like to see it run through the economy and actually have it go through the economy seven times and tax them every time it goes through the economy and actually make some money here.
Well,
Representative
Kahn. Mr. Chairman, I was just saying that there are a lot of people, particularly at the upper levels, that where I'm talking about, where I who do not make this as part of their decision-making process at all. Because if you're looking at the upper level of people, this is such a minor part of what they're looking at that it's clearly not going to affect any decisions they made.
Well, members, we can belabor this. Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair, I would beg to differ. I think it is a decision. Once they come in, we got one shot at these folks. We have one opportunity to have them make the decision to come to Minnesota. When they're here, hopefully. And so I say you don't limit it with income. You just let the folks come in. And I think it is for the ones that have more funds and more wealth. I think it's a huge decision for factor in their decision making.
Mr. Severson.
Mr. Chair, if I could, just to that one point, and there may be a misnomer here because everybody thinks that when you get out, you're a general at general's pay. And so when you're talking about individuals who are getting out after 20 and 30 years, they range from E7 to O6, and probably the revenues that they're going to gain from their pension go from, you know, $25,000 up to maybe $50,000 to $60,000 max, and it diminishes as they go up. So the incomes that they're coming in and bringing into the state aren't as much of an asset as the talent and skills that they're bringing with them that contribute to the local community. That's what this bill is about. This bill is about recruiting talent, recruiting a workforce that will be an economic engine for the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
One last point. I'm saying the higher the talent and the higher the income level of these people, the less they're going to make any decision based on this factor.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a mathematical fact. I mean, if it's a tiny proportion of what you're doing, you don't consider it. Most people who understand mathematics do that.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Davids.
Representative Kahn, it's the principle of a thing.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Chair.
We need to move on.
Thank
Representative
you.
Detmer.
We had some good discussion like we always have, and I'd like to move that House File 82 be approved and be moved to the Tax Committee.
Any further without ado? All those in favor of the House File 82 being passed and moved on to the Tax Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion's carried. You're on your way. Now we have one last bill. Can we do it in 15 minutes?
Mr. Chair and members, I have no testifiers for this
okay.
bill.
If you go ahead and move the bill and then
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 240 be approved and passed to the Tax Committee.
Representative Dittmer, go ahead and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 240. Basically, what I'm doing here is amending current law. The current law provides a level of market value exclusion for property taxes for the homestead of disabled veterans having service-connected disability of 70% or more. The exclusion is for $150,000 for market value. This is current law now. If the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has rated the service-related disability as 70% or greater, and $300,000 of market value if the service-related disability is 100% total of permanent disability. When a qualified veteran precedes his spouse, this benefit carries over to the spouse for one additional assessment year. I think that's 2 years, isn't it, Mr. Cleary?
Mr. Chairman, the law reads one additional year. However, since 1 year is always in progress, it probably amounts to two in just about every case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cleary. Mr. Chair?
Representative Detmer.
When a qualified veteran precedes a spouse, the benefit carries over to a spouse one additional assessment year until such time the spouse sells, transfers, or otherwise disposes of the property. The bill would expand the eligibility of the benefit in the following ways. The home would no longer need to be wholly owned by the veteran and the veteran's spouse. It need only be partially owned by them and partially owned by the approved primary family caregiver of the veteran. The home would no longer need to be qualified veteran's homestead so long as it is qualified veteran legal residence. And 1 year limit on the carryover of the benefit of the disabled veteran of the spouses is eliminated, such that the benefit of the surviving spouse would continue until the spouse disposes of the home in any manner. So that's basically, we're just amending the current statute. I know one area that we added to this, and I talked to Mr. Cleary about this, and was many times veterans, when they're disabled, they would like to stay in their own home. And if they don't have a spouse or a caregiver, many times a brother or a son or daughter can take care of the veteran in their home. And that would give that home then a tax credit on the property tax. So that's what we've added to the current statute, along with the other things I just mentioned. And Mr. Cleary, do you have any comments?
Mr. Cleary, do you have any thoughts on this?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's worth explaining what a primary family caregiver is. There's a new federal program that recognizes that a number of the young veterans are coming home from war with serious brain damage that might be temporary. There can be some recovery, maybe complete recovery. Also coming home with PTSD or some other physical injury. And it's very expensive, of course, to keep such people in military hospitals or other hospitals settings. Very, very often the family wants to care for this person to the extent possible, but might need assistance from the VA. So Congress has established this program in which they designate family caregivers and then designate a primary family caregiver and then support that primary family caregiver, who also often has to quit his or her job. It might be a parent, brother, or sister quits his job, her job, and devotes her life to taking care of that son, trying to get recovery. In the meantime, the VA does everything it can to provide proper medical services and backup for that person. The VA is saying this is a lot cheaper and far more effective. The veteran in that case is probably living with mom and dad, may not have a house of his own. If he has a house of his own, and he and his wife, they already qualify for this property tax break. But if they're living with mom and dad under this legislation, mom and dad would qualify for that property tax break if one of them is the federally designated primary caregiver. The state would not have to determine who that is through any assessment program. They would just piggyback onto the federal designation.
Representative Kahn.
Are there limitations as to what would be considered primary? What would be considered family? For example, how would this apply to either legally married gay couples or couples in domestic partnerships?
Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, I'm sorry that I don't have a specific answer to that. I have read the federal legislation on this. It's quite extensive, and it's very impressive how thoroughly they seem to have thought through just about everything. And this was a surprise because I didn't know this federal legislation was in the works. It's just been passed in May, and it's only now beginning to be implemented. I don't think there are very many such people in the state of Minnesota. It might also be worth pointing out, Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, Representative Detmer, that this program currently and under the bill would have no cost to the state. It's a property tax program. Since property taxes are administered and paid locally, for each person, for each disabled veteran who receives this benefit, the cost would be spread to the rest of us in some small amount. The rest of us in the same taxing district, maybe 50 cents, which is probably not noticeable. I should point out also that the veteran has to be at least 70% disabled. For the primary caregiver, it might even be higher than that under the federal program.
Representative Kahn. Mr. Chairman, I'm also interested in this benefit of the veteran spouse for one additional assessment year and the conditions. I noticed that if the spouse remarries, there's no condition. The one additional year would probably take that into account, but this would be no, the spouse could remarry and would still retain this benefit no matter. Again, I'm asking this as a question, for some information. If a spouse remarried, no matter what the status or the person of income or the person she remarried, would still retain this as long as she lived in the house?
Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, at one time in the past when this bill was being considered, there was a marriage clause in here. I don't see that in current law at all. I don't recall it being in there. So the spouse could remarry and continue to get the benefit up until the time that the spouse sells, transfers, or otherwise disposes of the property.
Mr. Chairman, I'm saying as long as the qualification of one additional assessment year was there, I don't think that was a serious issue because you're only looking at 2 years. But once you take that away so it goes on forever, I think the issue of remarriage is something that ought to... Most, as I understand, many benefits disappear. Many benefits that pass from one spouse to another disappear on remarriage.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Cleary. That's true. That back in the World War II era and previously was a feeling that there needed to be only one breadwinner in the house, for example, and so you had back in that era some of these remarriage penalties, and you still see a bit of that in federal law. I'm not really aware of any in Minnesota law. For example, it used to be that if a teacher married, the country school teacher in the state of Minnesota had to resign from a teaching job. Or if the teacher was married at a later point and got pregnant, the teacher had to resign from a teaching job. Well, those laws have kind of fallen by the wayside, but your point is a good one, and it's a policy issue for you to determine.
Representative Kahn, follow
up. Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to know something about the history. It seems to me that, you know, again, remarriage ought to be something that when it passes on to the veteran's spouse without restrictions at all. So I guess I want to know why are we taking away the restriction for one additional assessment year.
Representative Detmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, in this case, the spouse could be the husband. The veteran could have been his wife. And as long as he lives in that home, he would still get that benefit. As soon as he moved away from the home or sold the home, then the benefit would go away.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I just think there ought to be some...
Further clarification.
You know, some clarification, and some particularly with Mr. Cleary saying that at one point there was a remarriage clause in here. So I'd like to know why that came out and should it go back in once we take the one additional year away.
Mr. Cleary.
I understand taking it out when it's only one additional year. I'm not sure I understand it. You know, again, it's not an area of law that I'm familiar with at all, so I don't know how many things get lost upon remarriage. And I don't think, we're using the word spouse, I don't think this is sex-based at all.
Mr. Clay?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, it's not clear to me why the marriage thing came out. I think, in a way, it impresses people as kind of an antiquated view of looking at things, but on the other hand, it may not. It may not be. I do think, however, that the easiest way to amend the bill to re-effectuate that would be on line 2.3. One could add a simple word, remarries, after spouse. So it would read, until such time as a spouse remarries, sells, transfers, or otherwise disposes.
What's the path of this bill now?
This goes to taxes.
Well, I'm not. I don't think I'm comfortable making that amendment until I find out why it came out in the first place. If there was discussion about the one additional assessment year, or related to that,
Mr. Chair,
or someone would give some justification for.
Representative Davids?
Someone give some justification, leaving it in upon remarried.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, just to clarify the path a little bit, to come back to taxes, we'll send it over to property taxes, and if it passes there, it'll come back to full taxes, so there'd be some time in there to clarify some things.
Representative Kahn? Further? No. Okay. Representative Detmer, maybe that'd be something to, as we move this bill along, they can...
Thank you, Representative, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Kahn, for bringing that, that was something I was thinking after the bill was written, what happens if the spouse remarries, and now if it's the spouse the husband remarries, he still owns that home. Okay, he still owns that home, and he'll probably stay in that home. If the spouse is maybe his wife, and she remarries, she might stay in the home, or she might sell the home and go on to another home. So that's why I didn't. Address the marriage issue originally. So,
Representative Anzalk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if my question or comment adds clarity or further gets us in the weeds here, but I'm going to take a stab at it because I too have been working on this issue and have been working with some language. My recollection, however, is that this was fixed. This was in law in property taxes payable 09 because I had constituents who were receiving the benefit, who were disabled veterans who were receiving this property tax benefit payable 09. And then payable 10, they learned that for some reason, this provision was stricken from law. And furthermore, Representative Eakin on the House floor in 10 tried to correct this problem similarly to what Representative Detmer is attempting to do. And we passed his amendment on the House floor. And then, once again, in conference committee, the provision was dropped. It might have been another case of the powdered wigs in the other body doing something not in the best interest. But that's my recollection of how this all got us to this point.
I'm wondering if anybody from staff, Ms. Manzi, do you recall anything like that, if you could give us an indication of your recollection? We have memories, but they're not that long.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from House Research. I can confirm some of Representative Anzell's memory of the recent history of this provision. This is also a little outside of my subject area. I work primarily in the income tax area while this is a property tax issue, but I can confirm that in the 2010 session, this provision was the provision that allows the homestead exclusion for disabled veterans was in law, and it was in law as it is now in law, where the surviving spouse will retain the benefit for the rest of the year in which the veteran passes away and for one additional year. Representative Eakin offered an amendment on the House floor to the tax bill in 2010, which was adopted, that would have removed that one-year limit on the surviving spouse retaining the benefit of this homestead exclusion. That provision was then dropped in the conference committee and not included in the tax bill.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. Representative Anzok, you have a wonderful memory.
Just lucky.
Any further questions? Representative Kahn.
Sorry. I don't. But on 2.1, can someone explain what that phrase means? Holds the legal or beneficial title to the homestead and permanently resides there. Does that mean that that's a homesteaded property? Or was that, and what does permanently reside mean? Does it mean, you know, we've, what I'm interested in is that the house could remarry, still have the legal or beneficial title, still reside there at some, I don't know what permanently resides means, and then move to a spouse's house and still be getting this exemption and rent it out and all sorts of stuff. I don't know if that's covered by the language in line 2.1.
I think Ms. Manzi is going to come forward again and help us out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I'll ask one of my colleagues to get a definitive answer, but my understanding is that since this is an exclusion for homestead property, the surviving spouse would have to maintain that property as their homestead and as their principal residence. If they move, they would have to meet the requirements for it to be their homestead in order for the exclusion to continue.
Yeah.
Representative Kahn?
Further? Well, could such a person keep all that and remarry and move somewhere else and still say that they've kept it because they still have that as their homestead?
Mr. Kahn, Representative Kahn, maybe Mr. Hinsey could refresh us. Just miracles of miracles, wonders of wonders.
And technology.
For the record, would you identify yourself at the table?
Mr. Chair, Steve Hines from House Research, and I was listening to the committee upstairs, and on the question that Representative Anzels raised about the what had happened in 2009, the issue that you're referring to, I believe, Representative Anzels, had to do with this issue of some properties losing the part of their valuation exclusion because of some reclassifications of the property that went on in 2009, but it was not related to the issue of surviving spouses in any way. And I'm not sure if that clears up all the questions, but that was the one I heard that was
Mr. Hinsey, Representative Kahn has another question on 2.1, which is on the back side of this the bill, on that line regarding homestead and permanently resides there. What does that mean exactly? Hines,
I'm sorry.
My specific question is if the spouse, if it has to be homesteaded, meeting the requirements of being homesteaded property of the house, why doesn't it just say that instead of this funny terminology? To me,
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I'm not sure the answer to that question about why it was worded this way, but my understanding is that it is exactly the same as the concept of homestead that we use in all the property tax laws.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Any other questions for Mr. Detmer, Representative Detmer? Anybody from the audience that would like to testify for or against? We've got one gentleman coming. If you'd be willing to identify yourself, and please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll keep my comments real short and just say that this is Rob Vanosik on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And there is some language that sounds like some folks have already identified that could be a little bit ambiguous. And I tried to catch the author earlier today, and I think we just kept must have been doing laps in the same going around the same floor, and we'll touch base before the next stop and work with the author on a couple of concerns.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Vlasic. Representative Khan?
Could you just specifically say what the concerns are? Just briefly, obviously.
Tracking, it gets to be a little bit more difficult to track folks when we're getting away from on page 1, line 12. We're deleting homesteading and going to legal residence.
Yes.
That's a little more difficult for, you know, assessors don't follow folks around. We hope to get information from them. And then how long these, what is a primary family caregiver? Just to understand that a little bit better. But how long do they qualify for? You know, the spouse under this language goes on to in perpetuity. Does the family, primary family caregiver, you know, are they possibly getting this benefits? You know, and right now, a permanently disabled veteran is that's a one-time application, but a 70% or more disabled veteran, that is an annual application that's made to the assessor's office. So we know, because folks do heal, and you know, if they fall below that, you know, we know that they're continuing to meet that threshold, and you know, save the rest.
Representative Khan?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that this bill be laid over until these things are cleared up. I think that it's a real mistake to pass these bills on to a committee that's as burdened as the tax committee is without having them in as good shape as we can possibly do, even if we consider that they're taxation issues.
Representative Davids?
Well, Mr. Chair, that motion certainly be in order to lay it over, but I'm quite comfortable with this one coming to the tax committee, in that the issues we're looking at here are the tax issues, not so much. We kind of understand the policy here, what we're trying to do, I think, as far as the veterans side goes. And it looks to me like it's what Representative Detmer needs to do is work with the affected parties on the specific tax issues, whether it be legal residence or homestead. And that's tax committee stuff, would go to property tax and decide, but certainly up to the committee what they'd like to do. But I think she's ready for prime, not quite ready for prime time, but we'll get it there.
Well, I didn't make it as a motion. I just made it as a suggestion. But if the chairman of the tax committee doesn't see any need for that, you know, then so be it. I'm not going to. If he wants to do all that, let him do it.
Okay, gentlemen and ladies, we have about 5-6 minutes left. And Representative Detmer, if you'll be willing to work with these people that have their concerns, and the chair of the tax committee is willing to take it, please unless there's questions. Anybody have a question other than Mr. Vlasic? Detmer, would you please reiterate your
motion? Mr. Chair and committee, I move that we pass House file and move it on to the tax committee, and I'll be working with people to clarify some of the language.
Okay, House file 240. All those in favor of moving House file 240 to the tax committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carried. And those bills are done, and we're at the nick of the time. We've done the minutes already. Anything else for the betterment of the whole here? Any other comments? A meeting next Monday, we'll be having another meeting here, same time, same place. With that, members, the Veterans Subdivision is adjourned.